all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding all my life.
Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Facebook Live, we have it all set up today. Darren has his new nifty setup. He's standing in studio right now. What's this all about? You're now too good to sit? It's like the standing desk people.
No,
that's what it's looking like.
I was talking with Lebo before the show. You know, Therese Paylor, our friend who passed away back in February, you know, his death kind of shook me. So it's like I had to kind of get back into shape, you know, kind of lose some of that baby fat, you know, from over the last 2 years, all the gaits and the wings and things. I kind of had to cut some things out. So I guess I've been in the gym the last, since Saturday, but going hard with the weights, arms, legs, cardio.
Yeah.
And so feeling the effects of it. So I can't sit, right? I mean, it's actually hard for me to drive to sit long enough in the car. And then what's interesting, me and my brother, we were in the gym. He trains me. So we were in the gym today. And I was like, man, my arms are burning. And, you know, because we were doing our arms stuff on Saturday. Well, we were doing arms again today. We were doing like bicep curls and press and all this other stuff, hammers and stuff like that. And then I'm thinking, okay, so it's going to affect the chest today. So I know I'm going to be up late tonight in the middle of the night. My chest is going to be burning and stuff. So I'm just like, man, I'm not feeling it. But, you know, got to do what you got to do. Got to get back, you know, got to make sure that I look Super Bowl ready this fall.
There you go. Good for you, Darren. Proud of you. Dude, I played basketball yesterday for 2 hours. I haven't played inside. Like, I haven't played actual basketball inside since the pandemic started. So I'm talking like a year and a half. I am dying right now. My legs feel like jello.
Yeah, no, I mean, and look, man, it's a hard thing, man, because it's funny. My partner used to work over 6'10". Ron Hughley works down in Houston. He's dropped 100 pounds since January. Now, he gave me the info to give it to these people, so the weight loss, but I'm like, when I talked to him, they want like 7,000, 8,000. I'm like, man, kiss my ass for that. I'll walk from here to Houston and lose that way before I give you 7,000, 8,000. So I was like, you know what? But it's like, it's one thing to see people do it, but it's also, I can't just be sitting on the couch and be like, I'd be looking at my elliptical/bike, recovery bike. Yeah. And I'd be like, man, if I was on there, you know, if I was on there, like, literally, I do plan on being on it during the NBA playoffs because that's where my attention is going to be. So I'll be doing that. But it's like, obviously, this whole year, I could have been doing it, could have been doing it during the games. But, man, 3 hours is 3 hours. That's a long time. So my brother tells me, half hour you can do it, man. But
Work out with me. Come join me.
Come join me.
I work out during Royals games. Like, I'll just do.
No, you come join me.
Come to yoga with me.
Come to Planet Fitness with me.
Actually, I like Planet Fitness. Planet Fitness is great.
So I go to the Planet Fitness. Now, I got one for anywhere, but the home gym is over in Raytown, 63rd Street, just because it's nearest to my house.
I love it. I miss Lifetime.
Yeah. Now the one thing I have not done yet, I haven't sat in the massage chair. I'm probably going to do that tomorrow. So today, you know, we do a little trading, and then then we go to the gym. So. He wants to get up at 5 in the morning. My body just says otherwise.
I almost cussed on air. 5 in the morning is a time when no one should be awake.
What time he wants to be there. That doesn't mean what time I wake up.
I get that. No. Like the morning show guys, like Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady, how the hell are they waking up that? My mom did a morning show for like 20 plus years. No idea. It's miserable. You go to bed at like 9 or 10. I'm not built like that, man.
Yeah, I can. I mean, I can wake up. It's rolling out the bed. I can roll up. I can get out the bed. I can go use the restroom. But it's like just to get up and start the day. It's like I generally try to start my day at 6:30 because, you know, we try to get the trade stuff in. I'll trade pre-market at 7:30, try to make a few thousand, then 8:30, do whatever, and then try to have the rest of the day free. So that's my schedule, more or less.
Talking about in shape, I think we should talk about Lucas Niang because there has been talk all on Twitter for some reason that people are saying Lucas Niang's out of shape. He's overweight.
I saw that Saturday. It really pissed me off.
And I'm laughing because it's like, do people not realize he's an offensive lineman? Like, what do you expect him to look like? He's not going to look like Tyreek Hill. He's not going to look like Travis Kelce. He's a big dude.
Well, here's what's interesting, that people seem to have forgotten the video that he showed when he was working. Now, this was before the Chiefs had acquired Orlando Brown. So, of course, he's, you know, he was working out in a left tackle stance. But I think what happens is people saw him in a sweatshirt and just didn't, you know, they saw him in a sweatshirt and shorts, but they didn't really get the gist, because you don't see somebody until they, you know, when you put on pads or the jersey and stuff like that, you're like, damn, that's a lot. Because when he came to the podium, and even when we spoke to Trey Smith on Saturday, them some large human beings.
Dude, they're just big guys.
I'm big weight size like them, but I'm just not as tall.
Yeah. Well,
deceptively sexy on me.
Even Jeff Schwartz, you know, former offensive lineman, goes,
I saw that, yeah.
Offensive lineman, a lot of times, they'll have guts. Doesn't mean they're out of shape. They're just big dudes. It doesn't mean they're fat. Doesn't mean that they weren't working out. They're just large human beings. And so I think that was blown out of proportion. I think it was an account on Twitter that maybe tried to get some clout, tried to get people to say, let's get some conversation going about this. Because Andy Reid talked about Lucas Niang, made it seem like if Andy Reid is happy with Lucas Niang, that's all that should matter.
Yeah, you know, I think I know the account you're talking about, because I started to call.
I'm not going to put him on blast and give him the satisfaction.
But it's funny, because before I did, I had to check, and I think we're Facebook friends. It's like, yeah, I'm really not going to do it, because, you know, I mean, because people think I'll start bullying on
sure.
I don't know.
I'm not doing that.
I don't mind it, but I'm just not, you know, God's still working on me, so I'm not going to do that. But when I saw that, and then he put up his new star. Well, first of all, he's talking about according to sort of like, dude, you got no damn source.
It was
like,
you. You were the source that you're trying to name yourself.
I'm like, dude, you don't even cover the Chiefs, dude. So, like, get that whole Chiefs reporter stuff out of your name and out of your thing, because you don't cover the Chiefs. You're not at the games. You're not at the practices. Nobody's talking to you. Nobody's sending you information. Nobody is reporting that he's overweight. Like, the dude is 6'6", 6'7", 330 some odd pounds.
Yeah.
He's a tackle.
Yeah.
That's the size he's supposed to be. Now, the only concern that I have, whether it's Orlando Brown, whether it's Trey Smith, whether it's Lucas Niang, is the fact that, to me, I know Patrick is a tall dude, but Patrick's gonna look like Russell Wilson behind this offensive line when they get some. Now, granted, Creed Humphrey looks like a little baby compared.
And he's a big dude. He's like 6'4" as a center,
which is crazy because when you look at it together, I guess if you don't see him side by side, but at a disproportion, it kind of looks like the Bidens with the Carters in that picture. Like, Lucas Niang looked like a huge human being compared to the rest.
Yeah.
And so, no. So, I mean, look, this is – I said this on the show yesterday. If Patrick is sacked, seriously, now, I don't know what the starting lineup is going to look like for the offensive line when the season starts. For me personally, I would prefer to be a veteran offensive line. I would prefer to be going from left to right, I preferred to be Brown, Thuney, Blythe,
LDT.
LDT, yeah. And then perhaps Rimmers. Now, Lucas Niang is that dude, cool. And I know you and a few others like Creed Humphrey. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think eventually they would be there along with Trey Smith. My thing is, just start the season off, you got $500 million protection. Protect them with as much experience as possible. And if everybody if they play their way into it, so be it. My only concern is, soon when you have, and you know, I got a chance to ask some of the players this over the weekend, when you have Brown, Thuney, Humphrey, Smith, and Niang as an offensive line for 3 to 4 years in the future, dude, that's a scary sight.
Yeah.
And Patrick should not be getting more than 5 sacks in a season.
Oh, I mean, it's going to come down to, one, how long is Joe Thuney going to play for?
Right.
And then it's going to come down to, hopefully, Trey Smith can be healthy with the blood clot concerns. I mean, I think the best part about Kansas City is having this. You can go the veteran route with Blythe, LDT, Rimmers. I wouldn't be opposed to having Rimmers at right guard, where he's played a lot in his career, and have Niang at right tackle. Or if you don't think Niang's ready for right tackle, put Niang at right guard and Rimmers at right tackle.
And there's still Kyle Long out there,
And there's still Kyle Long. The thing with LDT, he wasn't really very good the last time he was on the football field. I think people have fond memories of the year he got his contract, but then he got a contract that year before he took the year off. He wasn't great. And having a year off, not playing football, coming off of a not great season, my expectations for LDT might not be as high as the majority of people are. The good news is they have a plethora of depth at center, right guard, and right tackle, which alleviates a lot of issues there.
Chiefs with so much depth, again, you know, we talked about on the show yesterday. Obviously, you look at a player like Russell Wilson, he's complained for years about not having an offensive line. Patrick Mahomes has one bad game in the Super Bowl, and we revamped the entire front line to where it looks like Fort Knox out there. Like, seriously, to get to Patrick Mahomes, how are you going to go to somebody that's 6'8"? I don't know how tall Thune is, but, you know, Creed, you said, is what, 6'4", 6'5"?
I think they said 6'4".
6'4". And then you have when he becomes a starter, 6'6", and Trey Smith, and 6'6", 6'7", and Lucas Niang. And they don't give up sacks. They don't give up sacks, Sterling. That's the biggest part. They don't give up sacks. So how are you going to get to Patrick? I will be honest, and I said this on the show yesterday. Patrick, to me, is going to be the one with the most pressure on this offensive side of the ball because you've got the line to protect you. So, really, you running around for your life with a chicken with a head cut off shouldn't happen unless you're trying to make something happen. But you need to be able to elevate your receivers, you know, their play, their level, and be able to get the ball out to them because a pass rush shouldn't even be an issue any longer.
It's going to come down to can the receivers
get themselves open,
yeah. Get separation. And that's always been a big deal because it's always been with Sammy Watkins, the injuries. It's always been Tyreek, Travis Kelce, and then can anyone step up? We've seen D-Rob do it for a game. We've seen McColl do it for a play. Like, remember like against Tennessee Titans when he caught the ball in midair, fell, and literally just ran past everyone where you go, wow, he should have been tackled right away. Like, we've seen glimpses, but it's time for someone to grab this. I don't know if it's going to be Pringle. I don't know if it's going to be D-Rob or McColl. I don't know if it's going to be Powell, but someone needs to grab this number two spot.
I got a feeling it might be Powell. Powell, you know, let me not say this. I could see, because I do know that it's been reported that when they drafted him, they did tell him, you know, the mindset to have to come in and be prepared to try to start. I think that number two position is open. I know Sammy Watkins kind of, you know, kind of on social media over the weekend, kind of, you know, heap some praise on him.
Sure.
Wearing number 14. Look, he's got the pedigree. I talked to him on the Zoom on Saturday. And the fact that, you know, because I asked him, I said, how do you think the transition for you is going to be from going from Clemson, where you were coached by a championship coach in Dabo Swinney, you play with a championship quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. Now you're coming from one great college where, you know, where winning is everything to an institution with the Chiefs where now winning is the only thing. I mean, so it's like, how do you think that transition? He, to his credit, confidence, says that he thinks the transition for him is going to be easy because of the level of expectations, being able to play at a high level, the demands, being in front of a big crowd, he's not someone that's going to get nervous or anything like that. And he said, you know, catching the ball from Trevor Lawrence and then catching the ball from Patrick Mahomes, I mean, that's a wide receiver's dream. So I like the way he's going to be able probably to transition. I don't know if he doesn't have that quote-unquote blazing speed, but I think he is someone that, because the other thing you got to remember, he's 22, 23 years old.
He's a little older for
fifth year senior. Yeah. So I think that helps in his favor where, you know, his body is more of a man body and is ready for the rigors that's going to take place. He knows what it's like to play late into the season and play into January. So I like his ability and his chances of cracking the lineup, so to speak. Even if he's not starting, I think he becomes the third wide receiver, if not the second.
See, and I hope he takes the number two spot. And that's obviously, I think, everyone's dream and their goal. I envision him down the road being a DeMarcus Robinson, Chris Conley, that number three wide receiver who you're like, he's good. He's fine. I just don't see him being the...
Who, you talking about Powell?
Yeah. That just based on his size, his body, his speed, Mike Comp for him is actually DeMarcus Robinson. just and that's nothing. That's not a knock against him. I just think that's,
I think Powell, if
Rose about like 6'1", 6'2".
But what's his weight?
I think it was. I gotta look that one up. It may have been 210.
Because DeMarcus is not. He doesn't weigh that much, or as much as Powell. From what I saw in the Zoom and the footage, he looks a little bit thick. I mean, he looks like he's in real good shape. Like he's the one that's probably cut up. So I don't know about that one. If I was to be a bet man, if he learns the playbook, and I think, you know, and for him it's more so, I believe he knows the route tree. I don't have any doubt about that. But I just think that the fact that he comes in 23 and he comes in, you know, kind of older than most rookies that come into the league, I like his chances if he's able to grasp that playbook, develop something. I know, I believe the Chiefs have most of their players here for OTAs this week. So, you know, I think just by him being able to develop some cohesiveness with Patrick Mahomes, I like his chances of actually cracking the starting. He was the, you know what? I hadn't thought about it on offense, but and I don't think he will, but I think he will be given the chance to be the number two starter on this team.
Yeah, they're both similar size, similar weight. D-Rob's 205, he's 210. Both have similar speed. It's just you need a wide receiver who's not afraid to block. You need someone who can give you good depth, and I think that he will fill the D-Rob role once D-Rob's gone next year. I think that's going to be the best comparison for Powell. If he all of a sudden takes the next step, that's just gravy. That's fantastic. I just think he's drafted currently to eventually fill that D-Rob role the same way D-Rob was filling the Chris Conley role. You need third wide receivers that can do it all.
I think he was drafted to fill that number two role.
Not in the fifth or sixth round?
No, but stop and think about it. We expect Trey Smith, because he was a sixth round, but we expect him to probably start next year.
And that's because of blood clots. I mean, there's a reason why he was drafted there.
I understand. But what I'm saying is, but we also have expectations that he's going to be cracking the starting lineup as well. Am I correct?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah, so what I'm saying, and I'm saying the same thing about him, but what I'm saying is right now, if you look at the Chiefs depth chart, they have Tyreek. We know what he is. They got McColl and they got D-Rob as those number two and number three receivers. Do you credibly see McCole Hardman as a number two right now? Based off of what we saw last year and what we said.
I've said I don't see him as a number two. Exactly. I think he's a number three or slot. So
what I'm saying is, again, I think D-Rob can elevate to number two, but I'm saying in a three receiver set, I could see Powell being in that position instead of McColl, because I still think McColl still has a long way to go to become a better wide receiver than what he has shown. Sure. So I can see a scenario where they focus him more on the returns, because now that you got someone like Powell, you don't have McColl under so much pressure to utilize the speed and be another Tyreek Hill out there on the field. He can try to make big plays along with Pringle in the return game. Pringle, because of his size, I can see him getting more play at wide receiver than we see McCole Hardman.
Yeah, McCole's all going to come down to route running. Until he learns to run crisp routes, it's going to be a struggle for him to get tons of playing time.
But that's the reason why I see Powell in there, because he had a redshirt year. I know that this dude knows the route tree, playing under Dabo, practicing. You got to remember, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, those type of schools have like a NFL feeding system to where the coaching and stuff like that, they're playing you up for you to get to that next level. I believe that he's gotten that with Clemson. He's gotten that. He knows the route tree. Again, catching passes from Trevor Lawrence, you're not just out there running around and hoping he finds you. You're running specific routes. So I'm saying, I trust his route running ability more so than I do McColl, which means I think that that'll transition easier for him coming over to the Chiefs, where he'll get a better chance to get more playing time at wide receiver than McColl will.
I do want to play some audio that we have from Andy Reid.
Yeah.
And it's talking about Lucas Niang, because just going back to it, because I've been big on Lucas Niang. I think a lot of people have been big on Lucas Niang.
Yeah.
When the reports came out, or a report came out that he was overweight, it kind of got brought up. And here is what Andy Reid had to say about the progression of Lucas Niang.
You know, he's done a nice job in this camp, Adam. I mean, he's a big man, like really a big man that has these beautiful feet. So I look forward to getting him back in the pads and training camp and moving around and doing what offensive linemen do, the real football part of it. But till then, this gives him a chance to get acclimated mentally and physically as he goes forward. So I think that's it's a good lead up for him.
Just generally speaking, what are sort of the concerns about a guy that hasn't played competitive football in a year? Like what specifically will he have to sort of catch up on because he wasn't actually in game action?
Well, he actually came in better shape than he probably was last year, you know, so that's a plus. You know, he's been doing stuff and so he came in and it looked like he got right back into it. For what we asked him to do, he was fine. He's a very intelligent kid. I think you guys know that, but he's very intelligent. So just getting him back in the swing of things, I looked like he did that well.
So he didn't shy away, called him a big, big man, but said he has beautiful feet. And that's what it comes down to is
– Yeah, the whole Rex Ryan thing had me scared for a second. Come on, man. Come on, Andy.
That was good. That was a good one right there. But, no, that's what it comes down to is as an offensive lineman, do you have quick feet? Can you move side to side, laterally, front and back? Are you not a stationary person? You got to be able to be quick. And that's all he basically said was, yeah, he's big, but he's quick. He's got good feet. He knows to be in the right spot and how to move that body.
Well, not only that, when you saw the footage that our friend Harold Coons shot, he was the one that was leading the pack when they were running during the drills. Like, wow. You're worried about this guy, whether or not he's overweight. First of all, he's beating Creed Humphrey and everybody else. You know, it's only sure. Four of them, but still. Man, first of all, you want somebody huge that you can't push around. I think we talked about it. Chase Young has said that was his biggest challenge when he was in college.
It was, yeah.
He could not get around this kid. So, look, man, if I'm a Chiefs fan, the last thing I'm worried about is whether or not an offensive lineman is out of shape.
Yeah, Willie Rofe, does his huge stature ring a bell? I mean, I am excited for Lucas Niang, Andy Reid. Those were glowing compliments. Basically saying he's in better shape than he was last year. He's looking like he's
and he was still the same weight. He was the same weight when he checked in that he was when they weighed him at the combine.
Yeah, so I'm excited for Lucas Niang. I am extremely excited for Lucas Niang.
I'm excited for when these little draft picks mix and mingle with the veterans.
Yeah,
and whether it's the OTAs this week or mini camp or training camp, when they all get together and they start competing. We'll see.
We do have more audio from Andy Reid. This time he's talking about Nick Bolton, the linebacker from Missouri.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I'll tell you now. He had a nice interception today, actually, right in the red zone. So he's Tiger tough, man. I mean, he's out there battling, and you have to love it. He's got great instincts. He's very intelligent. Did a nice job. Now we're in shorts, and he's a linebacker. So, I mean I know he probably can't wait till we start hitting and that, but for this for the drills here, he sure did a nice job.
There's first off, Tiger tough. We love that. M-I-Z. No, but he talks about the coverage, the interception. Again, they're in shorts. It's different. It's not the same as wearing pads. We know that. People kept saying he wasn't great in coverage. I watched all of his games. He's good in coverage. Pro Football Focus ranked him good in coverage. So I don't know where this.
I don't know how you get to be second team All-American and you're not great in coverage and all around, but that's just me. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I don't know football.
I think some people in national media, maybe people who didn't see him play, see, okay, he's not extremely athletic. He's not extremely fast. And maybe that translates to him not being. He has very good instincts. Nick Bolton has extremely good instincts. And that's what separates him from some other linebackers. There's a reason why he's drafted in the second round while typically being undersized. Because he's got good instincts. He knows
you
where
know
to
who
be.
Else was undersized that had great instincts?
Who's that?
Ray Lewis.
And there you go. I mean.
And I'm not comparing, but I'm
no,
just
no.
saying.
Yeah, and I'm excited for Nick Bolton because while he is good in coverage, I think his best attribute is tackling. He is not afraid of getting there. He will mix it up. He
will
lay the wood.
That's something the Chiefs fans are going to want to have happen. When you're facing Cleveland, week number one, those running backs. When you're facing Baltimore, week number two, you're going to want a linebacker that can tackle, that can you know, run from side to side and play off the edges. Yeah, that's what you want.
I don't know if he's going to be playing week one or week two by any means. He may get a snap here and there, but Willie Gay, we thought Willie Gay was going to get a lot more snaps early on.
But Sterling, they didn't have a training camp. They didn't have a real training camp. They didn't have preseason games.
Sure.
Difference. Big difference. He's going to get reps. Like Willie Gay is going to get, they're going to get the reps that they did not get last year because of the pandemic and all this other stuff. So as long as they're getting in with the training camp and the rookie mini camp and the OTAs, trust me when I tell you, one thing that Andrew says is that they're going to be hitting these players with all this information because they want them to know the playbook, especially the draft picks. Now, undrafted free agents, you know, if they make the team, cool. But the draft picks that they got, that they signed, that they expect to make the team, they're going to force feed them, you know, the playbook and stuff like that so they can get a chance to be a part of this team and so they can contribute week number one.
I think I'm most excited for when I see Willie Gay Jr. and Nick Bolton on the field together. Because I think that's the future linebacking core that you build around for years to come.
I mean, you got 2 second-round. Those are your top defensive draft picks the last 2 years.
Yeah.
It better be.
But the thing is, though, I think they have –
and you get it for the cheap, too.
Exactly.
Relatively cheap.
And yeah. I think they both have the attributes that you look for in this style of defense. I think they've done a good job trying to match fit, scheme. Chiefs haven't spent a whole bunch of draft capital on trying to get better here. I mean, they brought in Hitchens, obviously. That was for a signing from Dallas. They spent wherever you want to put Breland Speaks, if you put him out outside linebacker, but he didn't fit this system once they switched over from Bob Sutton's. They drafted Dorian O'Daniel. I think that may have been a third rounder, but he hasn't really panned out. He seems like a special teamer. I'm just excited to see a couple of second-round draft picks invested here for the long haul.
Again, I think we talked a lot about Brett Veach and his draft history. A lot of people like to give him credit for finding Patrick Mahomes, but it was Dorsey that drafted him.
Sure.
Over the last 2-3 years, I mean, you could say, I guess, Mecole Hardman, because he was a quote unquote Pro Bowler, is a success. I like to think more so Juan Thornhill is the one that's really, panned out the most. But I think overall this draft class, I think all their picks, including Joshua Kando, I think that they will all contribute in some way this upcoming season. Now, some more than others. You know, Noah Gray, you know, may get in a play or two and may get some extended time, depending on what happens with Kelsey and the play calling that they have to do. I definitely expect, you know, Nick Bolton, I expect him to start in some manner.
Yeah, because
in some manner, in some manner,
on the depth chart, he'll be listed as probably a starter.
Yeah, depth chart. But you know, but I expect him to get he'll get a lot of playing time throughout the season. So that's no doubt. Creed Humphrey again. I don't really know, because when you're center, I'm just seeing you hide the ball. You just try to make, you know. So I don't know what type of competition, the depth you really get between he and Austin Blythe.
And then you have, technically, Nick Allegretti still there. And they moved him to guard.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, Nick Allegretti was a 6th or 7th round draft pick. I don't know if they have extremely high hopes for him. I think he's going to be more of a depth piece.
Yeah. And that's how I feel about Ken. I don't think he's going to start or anything like that, but I do think he will get some rotation piece in, you know, saying to kind of give breathers to, you know, to the defensive line. So I expect him to play. I don't expect big country, but I do expect him to get some rotation in. Trey Smith, like I said, depending on his health and what he's able to do. Again, when it comes to the linemen, I just don't know how you really judge how they do, unless you're just giving up sacks when you get hurt or something.
They have their metrics. Andy Reid, you know, Andy Hag. They know these.
But I will say, of all the players right off the bat that I see contributing game number one, I would say be Nick Bolton and Cornell Powell.
Before we take a break, since you touched on Joshua Kando, Andy Reid was talking about him, talking about some of his attributes, and so I figured let's play this since we're on the subject.
we'll see how it all goes. But you got a great work ethic. I mean, tremendous work ethic. He's very, very intelligent, and he's long. I mean, he's a big human being, and he's got long arms, and he knows how to use it. He's got heavy hands, they'd say. So, and then it's just a matter of him getting used to the scheme. You know, he's got a tremendous coach, and so he'll get all the fundamentals down, and then he'll take it step by step, and eventually go use them. Like I mentioned about Yang, I mean, it's rough on the O-line and D-line right now because they can't hit anybody and do their thing.
You know, wide receivers and running backs are happy since no hitting's going on right now.
Exactly.
The one thing I will say, that's a glowing review. He's not going to say anything bad about guys during training camp. He's not going to say...
He's not going to say nothing about his draft picks right off the bat, I would hope not, damn.
But it's tough to ascertain how he sees Kando fitting in. Honestly, the description he said, if you switch his name out with TK, I don't know if you see a difference. As far as the description that Andy Reid just gave, long, length, good hands, knows how to use them, athletic, intelligent.
I see no lies in what he said.
I see no lies, but I also see him saying the same thing he said about TK, and that's my only question mark still is, how is he specifically a different developmental prospect? Or if you're just saying, you know what, he is what he is, and we're hoping that this ends up different.
You could say that, but also say he comes to you cheaper.
I don't even know what TK signed for. He went to New Orleans. I don't think it was much. I'll check that
out. Fourth-round draft pick, but you know,
I'll check that out in the break. We'll check that one out in the
let's
break.
Do that.
This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. I'm not sure of what I see. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Facebook Live. Darren, did you watch the ending of the Royals game last night?
No, I have better things to do with my life.
I was laughing with my friends because the Royals were up, and I go, they're up 3-2 going to the ninth. I go, they're going to throw Wade Davis in there and they're going to lose it, aren't they? They throw in Wade Davis and lose it. First off, why is Wade Davis on this team?
First of all, why are you speaking things into existence? Speak me doing a 10-leg parlay and winning and break you off some versus you, you know, talking about Wade Davis coming and losing a ball game.
Yeah, because one, it was a joke because no way in hell should Wade Davis be in a high leverage save situation at this point. He's had a horrendous 3-year stretch. He's not been even remotely average since 2018. I just don't get it.
Loyalty's a hell of a drug.
And that's what it is. I think once Jesse Hahn and Kyle Zimmer come back from injury, he's an easy DFA'd, designated for assignment. He's done. To me, it almost sucks because you don't want to have a lasting memory of Wade Davis blowing games. He was so good for you for so long. He's not been good for 3 years. I mean, he's been horrendous for 3 years. Why even try a reclamation project? At least Greg Holland, he got himself out of a jam last night and it was great, and he's been pretty good, you know, the past couple seasons. Wade Davis is throwing up meatballs, nothing left in the tank. And don't even get me started on replay. Again, they blew a call on replay again.
You're talking about the home.
At home. Yeah. He's easily tagged, and then they call. Why have replay? Like, why have replay if you're not going to use it? If you're just going to go with whatever was on the field, if you're not going to overturn anything, why have replay? Are you sitting here because you're scared you're in Chicago? They're going to, like, because you're the away team? Like, if this was in Kauffman, would they say, all right, we'll overturn it because they're the home team? Don't just go with what the home team. It's so frustrating. I'm irate. I'm livid. It's just, last night was a debacle.
Sterling, I feel you. I mean, I can't really add much to it. One, because I didn't watch the game. I had, like I said, I was watching the NBA stuff. They had better games on, all 15 games, stuff that mattered. The Royals.
The Royals matter, okay?
If they would have won, losing,
they would have won 3 out of 4 against the White Sox, which talk about a great bounce back after losing 11 straight. But
including the games at Detroit.
Yeah, and then it's just a – One, something needs to be done about the bullpen, because the Royals' bullpen, I know some people were very high on it. It's terrible. The Royals' bullpen has been terrible. They have a couple.
So if you're Mike Matheny, what do you do, Sterling?
Not much you can
Nathan
do.
Play more for the day.
If I'm Mike Matheny, there's not much you could have done. You're throwing in Wade Davis, and I get the reason why you put him in. He has experience closing. You already went through Greg Holland. You had a doubleheader the two nights before, so you've gone through a lot of bullpen guys. Josh Stalmont, your supposed closer, even though they don't use titles, he's pitched, you know, two straight games. He's out. Scott Barlow, he just pitched. He's out. So it's either Davis, Irving Santana, you know, Tyler Zuber. You don't have a lot of good options. I think Mike Matheny's waiting for Jesse Hahn and Kyle Zimmer to get healthy, and then you'll probably see.
It's a long time to be waiting, man.
Again, you got to have more bullpen depth than this. You have all these young stud pitchers. If you have to put one in the bullpen, Daniel Lynch maybe. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here because. So
how do they bounce back?
It's tough.
From last night's loss. Because, again, you remember I told you, even though they lost 11 in a row, and they, like I said, they would have won 3 out of 4, it's still a situation mentally where you find ways to lose games. And that's never a good thing for any professional athlete, but that's what they're doing. They're finding a way to literally snatch victory out the hands of, you know, out of the jaws of defeat. So, I mean, if you're the Royals, I mean, you've – I don't want to say you got to take a nuclear bomb to your roster and what you're doing in the bullpen.
No. But the bullpen, maybe.
Yeah, but, you know, that's – I don't have the answers to that.
I mean, luckily they have the day off today, so you have time to –
So you mean they can't lose today?
They can't lose today.
Okay.
They play Milwaukee. They're back in – well –
I don't know. They're back in Kauffman tomorrow, aren't they?
Yeah, but we'll see with the weather.
That's what I was about to say.
You got Brandon Woodruff against Danny Duffy. Woodruff has been unbelievable this year, 1.64 ERA, but 1.64. But guess what? Danny Duffy's been great, too, with a 1.94. So,
hold on. Do me a favor. While you're looking at that, look and see if Lorenzo Cain still on that roster.
He's still on the roster.
Okay.
I don't know how much he has played this year. I think he's back now.
That's the one bad thing about it. Even though we can go back to the game, stuff like that, can't get to the players. So I can holler at him. So
yeah, he should be there.
I might just call him. Man.
Looking up, yeah, he's back. He's not playing great, batting .222.
But he's in the lineup.
He batted third on was that yesterday? Look, so he batted third yesterday. But
he'll be in the lineup tomorrow then.
Yeah, just based on Kauffman. Based on we got to see him and Salvador Perez get together just for some laughs.
Low Cain, it's my dude, man.
At some point, though, just going back to replay really quickly, are they going to overhaul this? Because there's been so much outcry, not just from Royals. The biggest screw job was the Phillies-Braves game when the guy never touched home, still never touched home, and they call him safe because they say that's what it was on the field. At some point, they need to stop protecting umpires.
I think you're going to have something happen in the playoffs where – that replay affects the outcome of the game. Because it's happening quote unquote so early in the season that if you don't have another incident the rest of the year, then it kind of gets like a one off, so to speak. But I think if it happens in the playoffs, World Series, Divisional Series, Divisional Championship, something like that, I think you can see an outcry, because if it has an effect on a win or a loss, especially in the World Series, then I can see that happening.
I agree, but it's not a one-off. It's been a 20-off.
I get it, but what I'm saying is because it's happening early in the season versus late in the season.
Sure.
I'm just saying because, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
I just think that.
Because we might not be talking about this in September. We're going to be talking about other things.
Sure. So. I'm just saying there's already been one game, the Royals and White Sox, which was determined. By
the Royals have been affected by it a couple of times, haven't they?
I'm just saying at final out. Final out was
no, I know that, but yeah. I'm just saying in general.
Sure, they've been affected a lot. Okay, and they've gone against them a decent amount. And then you had the Phillies and Braves game where that game was literally decided by a replay. I almost want to say, hey, let's send it to someone who has no idea what the call is on the field.
Send it to New York. Huh?
Just don't tell them. Don't tell him that if he was safe. Don't tell him if he was out. Say, what do you see from this replay? Give us your best judgment.
So basically, you want them to do like the NFL. They send it to New York. I mean, they have someone in studio that can look at it and, you know, kind of overrule the refs down there if need be.
I don't want it to say, well, what was it called in the field? Well, we're 95% sure he was out, but the call in the field was safe. There's an inkling. No, common sense says that he was out. You saw the jersey move. You saw him get tagged. You know this. He's out. Don't give me the, oh, well, it's not 1,000% definitive. You saw it move. This is not rocket science.
Okay.
I get so irritated. It's same thing in football. I don't really like the when calls stand. I prefer saying, don't let them know what the call on the field is. Send it to them and have you use your best judgment. What do you see?
But see, the only flip side of that is that you're still relying on the human element versus, like, if the human on the field says something, but the human in New York or in the sky says something different. Now and if it doesn't go your direction, then you're gonna be, you know, people are gonna be complaining about that.
But the human in the sky has got 30 angles slowed down. The guy saw it one time real speed.
But the official has it on the field as well. When they go in the booth, they can. They don't have a time limit on that I'm aware of how long it takes them to get the call right. So I'm saying the same thing that the official either in the booth or in New York is going to be seeing, that same official down on the field has the same vantage point, you know, when they go and look in the booth. So it could be one judgment over the other. Again, at the end of the day, if the judgment doesn't go in the direction that you as a fan of the home team that you're hoping that it goes and it goes against you, then you feel in a certain kind of way.
I'm almost to the point now in baseball where I say bring back the replay for what it was meant for, and that was for home runs. That was the reason why they had it, so that way you could tell if it was
bring
fair
it back
or foul.
And put it on the jumbotron so everybody can see it.
I love that. And when the Royals stopped doing that, that was one of the things that irritated me to no end. I'm like, let me boo this umpire like he should be.
Mercilessly.
Oh, it was merciless back then. I remember that. They need to bring that back.
But I think the reason they don't do it no more like that is probably because of safety. Yeah, probably the safety.
They don't want kids to hear F-bombs being dropped by drunk folks.
But here's the other thing, too, because, you know, really, and I've noticed this, you don't really get a chance to see an official's face unless he just wants to just, you know, bring his face mask up with him. But you generally don't know what the official, you know, or the ump or, you know, looks like. So,
especially with masks on during COVID, they're really anonymous now.
I'd keep it that same way.
Unless you're Angel Hernandez, because then you know, because he blows every call, and you're like, who's the guy who's making all the bad calls? I'm going to go ahead and take a wild guess now.
Oh, Sterling. So I got to ask, man, did you watch the NBA Hall of Fame speeches at all?
I watched part of it, and I saw there were some really cool parts in tributes for Kobe Bryant. I saw Tim Duncan's speech for Greg Popovich, and that was just phenomenal. Just a heartfelt, you know, it seemed like he didn't write anything down. Tim Duncan was like, I'm just going to speak from the heart, and whatever it takes me, and that was cool. It was good, man.
He did. I remember being on the Zoom call with him and Kevin Garnett Friday. They, you know, they were speaking from the heart. Yeah. Now, I think Vanessa Bryant, I purposely did not watch it because I didn't want to get emotionally invested in it, you know, because, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, we all know the situation with that. You know, Jordan was clean as usual. Obviously, I think she did well. Again, I want to shout out to Mika Catchings, you know, for the WNBA. She had a hell of a career, and I'm glad she got honored and recognized as well. Kevin Garnett, again, tell people all the time, said on the show yesterday, you look at that kid that was born in Malden, South Carolina, grew up on the west side and went to school on the south side of Chicago. I mean, so he, you know, he was able to survive those streets of Chicago to make it to the NBA and survive and do, you know, and having a long-lasting career. It was a good Hall of Fame, man. I mean, but when you look at the names that were announced for next year's Hall of Fame, I don't know. It's not going to rival this year's, but just the vastness and the amount of people that are getting in. You got Ben Wallace, you got Chris Webber, Paul Pierce, you know, KU kids, you know. I'm going to try to get Paul Pierce on the show. I got an email sent out to them about trying to get him on the show. Who else was there? Oh, Chris Bosh.
Yeah, it was a lot of names, but without this year was so good because Tim Duncan, KG, and Kobe, if you're going big three.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's just so hard to rival that you can't rival that. But next year, you know, let's take a quick break because I've seen some stuff about Chris Bosh and all that stuff floating around there. I think you may have had something out about Chris Bosh. Did you?
I have no idea. Well, we'll see when we come back, won't we?
We'll see when we come back. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Twitter and Facebook Live. So, before the break, we're talking about next year's NBA draft class. I've been hearing people say Chris Bosh isn't a Hall of Famer. I thought you may have said something about that. Maybe not. I think he's in. Like I
never had any doubt that he would be in. I mean, hell, he was multiple time All-Star. He won. Yeah. He was a contributing, a main factor of them winning two world titles. I mean, his career was just cut short because of blood clots. I mean,
yeah. You know,
and he got paid well for it. But, he is, you know, everybody likes to blame LeBron for the form of the super team, even though we forget about Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. But if you're going to credit LeBron, you got to credit Chris Bosh as well, because he had to buy into it. Because initially it was going to be Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Carmelo Anthony. But Carmelo Anthony decided to take the money in New York, which is stupid on his part.
I don't blame him, because it's New York, and he was the king of New York for
but
a
he
while.
Wanted to win a title, and he wasn't going to win a title
no, he
in
wasn't.
New York. So I'm saying, you know, so granted, look, you have to weigh things out. Now, granted, you could say, well, your wife, Lala. I mean, I'm sorry, they got things called planes and jets and stuff. You got the money, you can rent her. So she can live in Miami. There's a lot of filming that goes on in Miami. Bad Boys, Miami Vice. There's a lot of, you know, reality shows that she could have done, hip hop, in Atlanta or Miami.
I don't watch any of those shows.
I do. I cannot lie. I watch it religiously. Look, there was something I came across. I know we were talking about the NBA stuff, but the question is, how long can the Chicago Bears trot around or sell Andy Dalton as a starter, knowing that you're going to be going with this dude, Justin Fields?
Is Nick Foles?
Yeah, he's still on there.
I mean, the Bears are in a very weird situation. They have a lot of money tied up at quarterback, and everyone knows Justin Fields is at least going to be, if he's not the future, you have to give him a shot to be the future.
No, I think he starts game number one. I think what you do, though, you hope Andy Dalton doesn't get hurt, because you can use him as trade bait or trade value. Depending on camp, how people's training camps work out.
He's got no trade value. Nick Foles has no trade value. The Bears were the only team stupid enough
trade
to trade
to
for
Dallas.
Him. I don't have any problems if they think that Justin Fields isn't ready week one and they say, we'll sit him.
I think he will be.
But, you know, think of the Chargers when they had Tyrod Taylor and he was going to be the guy for at least a few more games until the doctor punctured his lung. Inside job there. No, I don't want to start conspiracy theories. But maybe they do the same thing here. They go, all right, Andy or Nick Foles, you're the guy for three games.
I'm gonna be honest though. I mean, and this is me. I think it hurts your credibility, especially Matt Nagy, when you know your job's on the line. Because to the point, look at Bill O'Brien when he was in Texas, when he was in Houston. You kept making it seem like this dude was a better, you know, was a starter, a fit to be, you know, to be starting over Deshaun Watson. And then during the first game at halftime, you bring Deshaun Watson out to start the second half, and that's that. It's like,
sure.
Instead of just naming the dude starter, because you know he's going to be the starter, let him get those first team reps, let him get those bumps and bruises out the way, get that experience now. So by the time, you know, because what you don't want to do, you don't want to try to thrust him in there in the middle of the season where he's got to now try to build chemistry with the team. You name him now, you know what I'm saying? Let him work out with the first team. Let him build on it together, because we know where it's going to go. He's going to be the starter.
Sure.
Whether it's the first game, but it's like so don't sit there trying to be too cute by half, and that's what I think that they're doing right now.
I mean,
and it doesn't work in their favor.
We knew Mahomes was going to be the starter eventually, but he waited a year.
But you already had a starter for your starter and Alex Smith.
Sure.
You don't have that in Chicago. Andy Dalton ain't started no teams. You know, he hadn't started any games, and so he doesn't have any more. He doesn't have any more chemistry with them than Justin Fields does. We got
to
go.
To me, it was like the Tyrod Taylor situation with the Chargers. You probably let him sit there for a couple games. That was the game plan, at least, until you feel Justin Fields 100% knows the playbook.
Make sure he gets a lot of reps with the first team.
No, I agree. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. We are out of here. We'll be back live into you tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m.